Good evening. In the news tonight, protests continue for 16-year-old Brooklyn teen Kamani Gray. Student guest workers from Latin America protest working conditions at McDonald's. The Obama administration pushes clean energy. And you will see canoes going down the Hudson River this summer as groups support two-row wampum renewal campaign, marking 400 years of the treaty. With these and other stories, I'm Linda Perry in New York, and this is the news for Friday, March 15, 2013. A spokesperson for City Council member Jamani Williams says there will be another protest march in East Flatbush, Brooklyn tonight in response to the police shooting death of 16-year-old Kamani Gray. According to the spokesperson, word that the NYPD had established a frozen zone in the community is not true. He said that was just an internet rumor. Williams said he will attend tonight's march as an observer to try to prevent things from escalating, as happened earlier this week. Tonight's march gets underway at 7 p.m. at the corner of 55th Street and Church in East Flatbush. Kamani Gray died after being struck by numerous police bullets, including as many as three that struck him in the back. Police said undercover officers fired at Gray when he pointed a gun at them, but at least one witness has reportedly said that the teen had no gun and that his arms were at his sides when he was shot down. The shooting has sparked outrage in the East Flatbush community as demonstrators have clashed with police. Dozens of people have been arrested. The union representing New York City school teachers is seeking to trim mayoral control of city schools. Under the current system, the mayor appoints the majority of members to the panel for educational policy that votes on school policies. The United Federation of Teachers said it would push for state legislation that would let the mayor appoint just five of the board's 13 members. Union President Michael Mulgrew said mayoral control in its current form has not worked. Mayor Michael Bloomberg on his radio show on WOR today said, when the Board of Education ran the school system, it was a disgrace. The school system was run by a Board of Education before Bloomberg won mayoral control in 2002. The Cuomo administration says banks and mortgage service companies have released $112 million in insurance checks intended for victims of Hurricane Sandy, but delayed by being processed through the victims' mortgage holders. The state persuaded the federal mortgage holders Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to ease their standards to allow banks to move the checks more quickly to homeowners. 15 banks now agree to the department's request to release 75% of $40,000, whichever is greater, without the usual documentation or inspection. The remainder will be released only after one inspection. The department says 6,000 checks totaling $200 million were once delayed. New York's gun control law now requires federal background checks for private firearm sales. The provision taking effect Saturday requires checks by a licensed gun dealer who can charge $10 and issue a form showing the prospective buyer passed. Other provisions effective Saturday require mental health professionals to report patients likely to hurt someone and set tougher penalties for many gun crimes. A New York federal appeals court says environmental activists can try to prove that a chemical found in some soaps is potentially dangerous. On Friday, the Second U.S. Circuit of Appeals in Manhattan reinstated a lawsuit by the National Resources Defense Council. The group had sued the Food and Drug Administration to force it to finalize its regulation of triclosan, the chemical found in antibacterial soap, toothpaste, and other consumer goods. The FDA said it is looking into animal studies suggesting triclosan can disrupt hormone levels. A deputy social media editor at Reuters has been suspended after federal prosecutors say he conspired with hackers to cause a major online security breach that should be punished by decades in federal prison. Some in the Twitterverse say 26-year-old Matthew Keyes was just taking part in an online prank with Anonymous that briefly altered the Los Angeles Times' site. Keyes' indictment lays bare sharp divisions about the seriousness of hacking and what steps should be taken to stop it.
Unidos en la lucha no nos moverán.
Unidos en la lucha no nos moverán.
Angry and bitter college students from Latin America came to Times Square to spread the word about abuse they experienced at McDonald's fast food restaurants under the U.S. J-1 Guest Workers Program. Stephen Boykowicz is with the GWA, the Guest Workers Alliance.
There's about 1 million guest workers in the United States at any given time in different visa categories. These student guest workers are part of the J-1 visa program, which was originally for cultural exchange, but has been abused by a number of major U.S. corporations. We've recently seen cases, this one with McDonald's. There have been recent ones on the Walmart supply chain, with a Hershey's chocolate company as well, where these workers come expecting a cultural exchange, pay $3,000 to $4,000 apiece to participate in the J-1 program, as did these student guest workers, and wind up in situations of extreme exploitation, making well below minimum wage after deductions, and paying far above market rates for housing that bring their paychecks often to next to zero.
Guest worker programs are founded on employers saying they are not taking jobs away from U.S. workers, but to fill a temporary seasonal need.
But what we see again and again is employers of all sorts, large and small, falsely claiming that they can't find U.S. workers for the job, often because they posted a half-inch ad in a church newsletter once, or they had a call for interviews on Christmas Eve at 6 p.m. Honestly, we've seen both of these cases over the last year. And then when they claim they can't find U.S. workers, they'll source guest workers instead, pay them far less, and keep them trapped between their debt and threats of deportation. Because this program, like all others, binds workers to a single employer.
Well, actually, I didn't have any cultural exchange. I just have to work and stay at home waiting for a call if I want more hours.
Rodriguez Janez from Chile, along with other guest workers, paid GeoVisions, a program which places workers from overseas and U.S. companies, $3,000 to be in the program. They were placed at a Pennsylvania McDonald's, forced to pay rent to the owner of the franchise to live with seven others in a room in a basement. Many did not get the 40 hours a week promised, or if they did work more than that, they were not given overtime. Along with supporters from local groups protesting around wages and conditions at fast food restaurants in New York City, the guest workers entered the Times Square McDonald's.
And to work at McDonald's.
And to work at McDonald's.
Instead, we were exploited.
Instead, we were exploited.
We paid $2,000.
We paid $2,000.
To live in a basement. We were not paid overtime.
Let's go outside now.
The protest continued outside the Times Square McDonald's, during which time the corporate office said they severed connections with the Pennsylvania franchise. But guest workers say they will continue to protest. They want a meeting with McDonald's CEO Don Thompson and are demanding that McDonald's pay students all the money they are owed, including money spent to come work for the company, unpaid overtime and housing overcharges. They're demanding that McDonald's offer full-time work to U.S. workers who are struggling with too few hours, and that McDonald's reveals all the stores where it employs guest workers and signs an agreement with the National Guest Worker Alliance to guarantee basic labor standards for them, including protections from retaliation when workers organize against abuse. There are over 108,000 guest workers throughout the U.S., many at McDonald's 14,000 restaurants. It's been 2 years since the tsunami and earthquake hit Japan, causing meltdowns at Fukushima's nuclear power plants, releasing radiation into the atmosphere and into the ocean, causing more than 200,000 to evacuate. Three options were considered for the country's future energy supply: zero nuclear, 15% nuclear, and 20% to 25% nuclear. A government poll in August found 47% of the citizens favored zero, with the remainder split on the other choices. The Japanese government vowed to phase out nuclear power by the year 2030, but now the new ruling party changed its plan. The prime minister says nuclear power is necessary to bolster the nation's economy. The government removed 6 of 8 members from the post-Fukushima Energy Policy Board. These were anti-nuclear researchers who voted to phase out nuclear power. Closer to home, as part of his clean energy policy, President Obama announced a proposal in Chicago today to divert $2 billion in revenue from federal oil and gas leases over the next decade to pay for research on advanced vehicles. This follows his State of the Union address, where Obama said his administration wants to find ways to replace hydrocarbons as the primary fuel for the nation's cars, trucks, and buses. The idea enjoys some bipartisan and business support, but is likely to encounter strong resistance from congressional Republicans who will portray it as a tax on energy producers. The White House says the money will come from growth in drilling revenue from leases on public lands and waters over the next decade and is not a new tax. Officials said Mr. Obama will present the proposal as part of his all-of-the-above energy strategy, which includes an increase in oil and gas development, support for non-polluting sources like wind, solar, and geothermal energy, loan guarantees for new nuclear plants, and research into long-term alternatives to fossil fuels. At the Museum of the American Indian this week, there was a kickoff event for the two-row wampum renewal campaign, a statewide initiative to mark the 400th anniversary of the treaty, the first between Native Americans and Europeans. WBAI's Rebecca Miles was there and has more.
Wampum, a treaty signed by the Haudenosaunee and the Dutch in 1613, was meant to provide a vision for peaceful coexistence of different nations living and caring for the same land. The treaty is understood by the Haudenosaunee to be the foundation upon which all subsequent treaties were made. At the Museum of American Indian this week was a kickoff event to launch the two-row wampum renewal campaign, which invited Oren Lyons, faithkeeper of the Turtle Clan, Taro Doha, Sidney Hill, spiritual leader of the Haudenosaunee, and Pete Seeger. The two-row wampum renewal campaign is a major statewide initiative. Taro Doha, Sidney Hill, said it will mark its 400th anniversary this year.
Of the original agreement with the Dutch people, the first Europeans coming into our lands. So it's a it was an old treaty that we made with we've made treaties before with other nations, and this was the first one of the first treaties that made with the Europeans that were coming into our lands. And it was basically an agreement to how we were gonna live together, side by side, going down the two row, meaning going down to the river of life side by side, and you know, the Europeans in our boat and the native people in their canoes, and where we respect each other's ways, customs, religion, language, and laws, and knew that we would have problems, but try not to. We would have a way of settling those things, you know, but we would try to live peacefully as we travel this river of life together.
In the treaty, both agreed not to interfere in the affairs of the other or to damage our shared environment. The recent debates about fracking in New York State and the condition of the Hudson River, says Toro Doho, Sidney Hill, are just some of the issues.
Basically, you know, going by natural law, you know, we always respect natural law, respecting the things, nature, water, you know, all the animal life, and to be able to be sustainable with that, you know, to make sure that what you had was going to be there for what we call the seventh generation, the generations that are coming. So a lot of our mandates as leaders, of traditional leaders, are to make sure that what we say is, don't think of yourself, your children, your grandchildren, but think of the seventh generation as to what your decisions are going to affect. So it's kept us in a different thinking, or you know, it's a sustainable thing to preserve, but to make sure that those things are available to our to the next generations to come. Well, like one of our leaders were saying, well, someone asked if we were environmentalists, and he says, well, how can you be an environmentalist? He says, you're part of the environment. You know, you are the environment.
Andy Major is project coordinator with the Touro Wampum Renewal Campaign.
A focal point of the campaign is this effort to bring the Touro Wampum Treaty to life by traveling down the Hudson River this coming summer, starting in Albany on July 28th. And two rows of boats will enter the water, canoes and kayaks, one row of Haudenosaunee and other Native people, and paddling side by side a row of non-Native allies, traveling over 13 days from Albany to New York City, and then ending here with events connected with the United Nations International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples. And all along the way, we'll be reaching out to people throughout the Hudson Valley and in the metropolitan area to come and hear the messages of Sid and other traditional Haudenosaunee leaders to see the connection both between our responsibility to live up to these treaties that were made in our name and the connection between that and the need to preserve the environment for all of us to move ahead sustainably. The campaign draws on this history, on this 400-year-old treaty, but does so to look forward to say, we need to do justice, we need to live up to the words that we claim as a nation, to the ideals that we claim, and if we want to have a future, we need to work together to build it sustainably. And we believe that the voices of Indigenous people about how we do that are very important and can help us find sustainable paths to the future.
For more information about the campaign, check out the website honorthetouro.org. That's honorthetouro.org. For WBAI's Evening News, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting.
And that's our abbreviated news for Friday, March 15th, 2013. The news tonight was produced with Rebecca Miles and Jose Santiago. I'm Linda Perry in New York for the WBAI Evening News.